Simon Cleary, thank you for joining us today on Radio Adelaide. I'd like to start with my own experience of your latest book, The War Artist, which I picked up from my local library shelf because I was caught by the name and the beautiful cover.
It is a beautiful cover, isn't it?
Yes, and then I read it and found out how well it captured that book. It is your third book. I went on to read your other two and we'll talk about them. But I'd still had that wonderful experience of feeling like I'd discovered somebody new to me. I went on to read your other two. But can you tell me the story of finding the name and getting the cover, that bit of the process of bringing this book to us?
Well, thanks very much, Nikki. No, I'd love to talk about that. The story is a story about a veteran's return home from the Afghanistan theatre. He experiences the death of a friend and tattoos the name of that soldier on his body. And the title of the book, The War Artist, is a reference to the tattoo artist of the story. And she's a young woman who goes on her own journey. She's one of the three protagonists of the book, really. She uses art, tattooing for her, which is very much an art form for her, as a way of healing. And the book is a book about war trauma, but it's also a book about love, and it's also a book about journeys of healing. And so the war artist of the title, Kira, is that healer. And the title itself came to me. I can't tell you exactly where I was, but it felt perfect. It sort of draws from the great tradition that we have in this country of visual artists, painters and sketchers trying to capture the battlefield experience and have done that through many, many wars and many theatres. And they have used art to describe something of what that was like. And I was keen for this book, as much as it was possible to do so, and this character to capture something of that for the men. And in the book, they are largely men that she tattoos. The artwork, that was all organised by my publisher, University of Queensland Press, and they found an artist, a graphic artist, who had also done some tattooing work. And so the front cover is of a number of poppies, and poppies, of course, are a deeply emblematic symbol for us in this country of war, but they're done in a stylized way, and I love the stylized tattoo form that the poppies take on the front cover of this book.
There's a lovely photo on your website of you with that cover, which was interesting, and you do look pretty pleased with it at yeah, that moment of the author getting the cover.
Well, I think lots of books, the covers really, they complement the book, of course, and they try to capture something of what the book should be about. But many covers are works of art themselves. And I thought this one in particular was a work of art. I loved it.
The War Artist, the book seems to have hit a chord, I think. There's been lots of reviews. You've had coverage on Radio National. Did you have a sense as you were writing that you were getting into big topical issues that were affecting and interesting so many of us?
Well, it certainly interested me as I was writing it, and in speaking with people as I was researching and writing it. And that was a big part of the writing of this book, was the research and learning from others and from their journeys and their experiences. It was something that had some urgency to it. It certainly did for me. It did for many, many people who were part of the journey of writing it. And I think it has for lots of readers who've contacted me as well and shared something of their experience of it. And that urgency, I think, is something to do with the topicality of it, but also that in some ways the experience of returning home with war trauma, not just for the sufferer but also for the community who support that person, isn't represented in art a great deal at all. And so there was something that, there was a chord, I think, that this book struck in that respect.
Yes, and of course there are so many of us, as you say, who have been affected by that trauma. And it's only really now beginning to be well. I remember my mum trying to talk to me about what my dad had been through and why he just would explode. But it's become much more of a, and needs to be much more widely discussed, doesn't it? Because it affects so many millions of us, I guess, really.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's much more acceptable now, you know, dealing and talking about mental health issues in all sorts of contexts. All sorts of contexts is something now which doesn't have quite the shame attached to it that it did in the past. And that's not to say that it doesn't have any shame attached to it now, because it does. But I think things have changed. I think there are change. They are changing. I think that's all for the better too.
Simon, tell me a little bit more about that research, because to me it seemed you're the writing both about the incident in Afghanistan and then the following story of following the character as he comes back and his interactions with other people in the same unit. It seemed so completely credible. Is it about research, or do you have some personal experience?
It's largely about research, you know. In terms of personal experience, I'm not from a military background myself. One of my grandfathers fought in the First World War, and he came back with what we now describe as war trauma. He made a successful civilian life for himself, but he struggled with nightmares every night of his life, and that of course, affected his children, and it's a part of my story as well. But in my day job, I work as a lawyer, and I've represented many people who have suffered from mental illnesses of various sorts, including from PTSD. And in the course of doing that, I've sat with and heard the stories and advocated for many sufferers, but also, and this is a really, really important part of it, Nikki, they're family members. So, you know, when a lawyer acts for someone, it's often a suite of stories. You hear stories from perspectives from different angles, and the stories of husbands, wives, children, parents who try and support and do their best to support, often imperfectly, but often lovingly, and making enormous sacrifices they do, are pretty compelling stories. And so all of those stories were part of the research for this book. I was lucky enough to have people who have served in Afghanistan to share their stories. There is a hospital in Brisbane where I'm based, which has a unit and which has a tradition of caring for veterans who suffer from mental health problems, the Keith Payne Unit. And I spent some time with the Gallipoli Medical Research Association here in Brisbane, and they and their psychologists are incredibly generous as well in terms of their time. The book really was the product of the experiences of a lot of people. And as a novelist, as a writer, I tried to bring those stories together in an authentic way, but also in a way which did justice to their experiences.
I think you've achieved something that is not easy, really. It's a book. It's got plot and momentum, as well as those deep insights into the issues that come out through the characters, and they're all very richly drawn. Just briefly, what sort of writers have influenced you? Who are your favourite writers?
Yeah, look, I reckon plot's important. You've got to tell a story, you know, and particularly when it's a heavy topic, you know, you don't want to dwell, and I didn't want my readers to dwell in some quagmire. You know, there's a story here. There are characters with lives whose lives propel them forward, and the story is one that I hope is one that's filled with love and with beauty as well. And they're also leavening aspects. But in terms of writers, you know, Australian writers like David Malouf have been, you know, deeply influential. American writers, you know, such as Ernest Hemingway, and more recently Cormac McCarthy has been influential. And McCarthy is someone for whom plot is, you know, incredibly important as well. And then I'm reading a book at the moment by Richard Powers called The Overstory, which is a wonderful, wonderful book, really quite extraordinary. And it's also a book which is very, very beautifully written, but plot is incredibly important too. So that combination of plot and the beauty of the words on the page always attract me.
Just before we go on to talk about your two earlier books, Simon Cleary, you've published three books since 2008. That's working at a steady kind of pace, really, which I should say is reflected in those deeply developed characters and your crafted prose. Are you working on something now?
I'm working on a number of smaller projects at the moment. In fact, what I'd done before now, after my first couple of books, was to say no to smaller projects and just to throw myself into the larger project. With this third one, there are a number of invitations and opportunities that have arisen, and I've just been saying yes to those, which has been everything from returning to the writing of poetry, which is something that I did very early, to shorter pieces as well. And that has been, it's actually been really liberating to just be involved in some more smaller pieces that don't have quite the same timelines and quite the same enormous commitment that writing books do.
So let's go back then to Closer to Stone. That was 2012. And again, it's the themes of relationships between men, the strength of them, the difficulty of them, the difficulty of communicating, and then adding on to that trauma and the effects on lives. It's a big scope, isn't it? And once again, it was well received. Do you want to give a little summary of it rather than me?
Yeah, look, I'd love to. It's a quest story, and the two male relationships, the two most important ones, are between two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother. And the older brother joins the army and gets posted on a peacekeeping mission to Western Sahara, where Australia participated in the very early days of the UN peacekeeping mission there. And he goes missing, and the younger brother is sent out by his father to go and find the older brother. And so it's a mystery of sorts. What happens to the older brother? And Western Sahara is in northwest Africa. It's in the Saharan desert. And it's a story of the older brother who disappears into the desert. And so the quest is the quest of the younger brother who leaves Australia. And the younger brother's an artist, a sandstone sculptor, who leaves Australia to go and find him. And ultimately, we learn through the book that the...
Don't know spoilers. Honestly, no spoilers. This was one of those books where I had no idea where it was going.
Yeah, it was fascinating. Well, I guess no spoilers, but part of the context. And part of the context was that in 1992, I happened to be travelling through Algeria at the time. I was backpacking with a mate, to having a young man's adventure, as you sometimes do. And that was the time that the Algerian civil war commenced. And the civil war arose after some democratic elections that had been planned in Algeria were cancelled, and the fundamentalist Islamic party, which looked like it was going to win those elections, was denied government. And so it split into an armed wing and a political wing, and the armed wing then commenced what became a decade-long civil war in Algeria. And so that was some of the seeds of religious fundamentalism were very much playing themselves out in that part of the world, and their seeds, which we experience now, of course, are right through the world. Not just Islamic fundamentalism, but fundamentalism of all sorts.
Yes, and you go on to explore that right through until 9/11 and beyond. So I highly recommend it. And now I have some sense too about how you have captured the place of the Western Sahara. And maybe the cultures there too, because in the book we hear this sort of the UN peacekeeper culture and the interaction with the local people as well. Mm. And that comes from your Algerian experience, does it?
Yeah, it does in part as well. Mm. It certainly does. And that desert is beautiful. Deserts are beautiful, generally. They really are. The sand dunes, the oases, the vastness of it is really quite a beautiful part of the world.
And that comes through in your writing, yes. All right, well, let's move on then to The Comfort of Figs, which was your first book in 2008. You won a Queensland Literary Awards People's Choice for that, and I can see why, because it's so deeply rooted in Brisbane, about the Story Bridge. And I did have a couple of years in Brisbane, so I got it. I know how iconic that bridge is, and to build a story around the building of that. Once again, though, it's men's stories that come through, isn't it? Those men working together and risking their lives, and not only because it's modern and historical, interweaves between the two levels. You do look at contemporary issues as well.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Nikki. The relationship between the workers, you know, the boilermakers and the riveters, and even the engineers on the construction of the Story Bridge was central to that book. The competitions between them, the rivalries between them, and then the bonds of friendship between them as well. And it did. Some of the work of the workers on that bridge and other bridges around the world during that era of the great bridge building was dangerous work. And there was a degree to which you would need to be able to rely on your fellow workers when you were working from, you know, at heights without some of the safety apparatus that we have today. And so that sense of needing to rely on your fellow workers does create bonds, I think, bonds of trust as well as friendship. And exploring some of those bonds was an important part of that particular book and enjoyable to do as well. And that was a research task. It was also a task of wandering around the streets of the city, walking the streets of the city, because that was a book that is, as you said, it's very much a Brisbane book. And the figs in the title, the comfort of figs, are the Moreton Bay fig trees, which are endemic to this part of the world and other parts of Australia as well. But they're big, big character-filled trees. And so walking the streets of Brisbane and learning about the Moreton Bay figs and other, you know, big iconic fig trees was a wonderful part of the research for that book.
And what was the trigger for that? Was there some personal connection, or did you just come across the stories of the bridge building? Or
there was a personal connection with that one. And one of my relatives had worked on that bridge. In fact, he had migrated from Canada to work on that bridge. And so part of the family papers, which I was passed and became, you know, the steward of, included papers and plans for the construction of the bridge. And so, you know, you sit down and you read these, but there's a real beauty to the design of buildings by engineers. These plans are works of art themselves. And so I was enticed and drawn into that world through, you know, through looking and gazing at some of these plans.